This is Stephanie.
And this is Mandy.
And you're listening to Two Blonde Sleuths.
All right. This is episode 34. And Stephanie is going to tell a story tonight.
Yes, but it's going to be a joint effort.
I do know the story, so yeah. I guess I could chime in, but I don't want to. All right, so Stephanie, go ahead.
Okay, this story, it's not a story, it's true, that I'm going to tell you guys tonight took place in our hometown of Auburn, Alabama, which if you are not familiar with Auburn, obviously you don't watch college football.
Yeah, for real.
And you've been living under a rock, but we are an SEC college within the SEC conference because we really love our football. Excited for a new season.
The South and the football are really, the South being crazy about football is not a myth.
No, people plan their weddings, funerals, lives around college football. So it is huge. And our town is relatively quiet. It is a college town, but it still has that small town feel to it.
Yeah, it's pretty safe, even today in 2023.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm in Mayberry when different things happen. So we are a really pretty small town, although some people are always complaining about all the growth and development. That's part of life. We're not Atlanta, which is just an hour and a half north of us.
Yeah.
So this took place in 1967, when I'm sure Auburn was an even more idyllic town.
If it's safe now.
Oh, yeah. In 1967, I'm sure no one locked their doors, their cars. Kids didn't come home until the streetlights came on. Everybody walked everywhere without thinking twice about it.
Yeah.
Nowadays, we're all a little bit more cautious, but I still feel pretty safe. Yeah. Here in town. But in 1967, that all changed. There was a man named Edward Albert Sebold. He was 20 years old, and he was the son of a really prominent father and mother. I believe you said his father was a doctor of some sort.
Herman and Clara Sebold, and he was a doctor and a professor at Auburn University.
When I was doing research, which, side note, for this case, there is not, surprisingly, with it being a brutal murder case with multiple murders, you don't find a lot out there with this.
Pre-internet, though, I think is what it has a lot.
If I went to the archives or pulled out the newspapers with the microfilm, I'm sure that I'd find a whole lot more. But that's just not as easy to find. And
they're actually hard to read.
Yeah, because the quality of them. Because I was actually in Montgomery today doing a search, and I was in some microfilm from like 1944, and I could barely read anything.
You can, yeah, it's hard.
So it's so frustrating. Yes.
And I think his dad was a professor at one time at Auburn. I don't know if he was in 1967.
And they were obviously wealthy in those times because they had a house in Auburn. I also read they had a home in Long Island. They were well-traveled. They seemed to be prominent, affluent family.
It was a privileged child.
Yes. Yeah. Which no one quite knew how privileged he was, but that we'll cover that a little bit down the road. But he had dated Kathy Sinclair, who was also 20 years old, we believe, at the time. So if that age discrepancy is wrong, I'm sorry. But like I said, there wasn't a lot of information. I'm not sure if they were in school together at this time, but they did date.
I think they said that they met at an Auburn. She was at another college, but that she had done an Auburn class in the
summer.
She
was auditing a class, yes. Correct.
And they met there.
That's when she met Edward. Mm-hmm. And they did go out on a couple dates. Mm-hmm. But she said that she never, pretty much, this is 2023 speak, but it looks like he was always in the friend zone. Mm-hmm. And she really didn't see a romantic relationship out of it. And she has said that she actually dated several guys that summer, and it seemed to be just a casual, I'm having a fun time thing.
Yeah.
Apparently to Edward, wasn't so casual. He became very obsessed with her. She left, went back to another college, and then he focused all of his time and energy onto Kathy's mother, Juanita Sinclair, who was 44 years old. She was a widow. Backstory to that, her husband was a colonel. And I believe
it was a heart attack. He died suddenly at 41.
They were from Selma.
Alabama, yeah.
That's just a little south from here. And they moved to Auburn, and she brought her four girls with her.
Yeah, she moved to Auburn after he passed away, I think it was. Yes. Like maybe, I think she worked at the university too. Probably had to get a job after for insurance.
Oh, I would imagine
like
being a widow with four girls.
They said her youngest was only three when the dad passed away.
Yeah.
Remember that? That's sad. Yeah.
Then poor Juanita got in Edward's crosshairs. And I don't think that the feelings were ever reciprocated with Juanita to Edward in that way. I'm sure at first, especially in the 60s, people did not talk about sexual harassment, stalking, which is a huge point in this story.
It wasn't even criminal, I think.
No.
In like the 90s.
Correct. Like California actually criminalized stalking. Mm-hmm. But you were just SOL as a woman. So I'm sure Juanita was civil and cordial with Edward at first and maybe just thought, hopefully he'll go away. But I don't think she understood the severity of his issues.
Yeah, how dangerous he really was.
And he was very dangerous. So he became so obsessed with her. He was telling everyone that they were in this love, just absolute true love relationship together. I read where he was going around leaving pamphlets on people's vehicles that showed, because there was a major age difference. He's this college kid. She's a 44-year-old widow with four girls. I mean, that within itself, that would be like me walking into a frat party, a mom of two boys at 38, and no. Come on. I would tell the little boy if he even, you really need to reevaluate your life.
Well, I'm pretty sure the relationship was one-sided.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Apparently, Edward would get fixated on something and just couldn't let it go.
If he couldn't have Kathy, he was going to have the next
best
thing he thought in the family.
Exactly.
I don't know why he didn't go for the 17 or 18-year-old sister.
Yeah, I mean,
but anyway.
He was just really after Juanita, but he left pamphlets on people's cars. He said hundreds of them. I guess on windshields.
That's so crazy.
That showed.
Post it online.
No, they didn't have social media. So he decided to leave things on windshields of the age comparison between him and Juanita Sinclair and Mia Farrow and Frank Sinatra.
He compared it to
If I got to my car and found that, I would probably immediately go to the police because that is just such a rambling of a mad person. That doesn't even make sense to me.
Yeah, for sure.
And how that proves their love. I think it was when he met his family for Christmas in New Orleans. And that's when they started seeing this downward spiral.
Of Edward?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he talked about Juanita the entire time and also his hatred towards Kathy.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of resentment there. Just lots of problems with Edward. And I believe his brother, Robert Sebold, actually really saw that red flag there.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure it was discussed amongst the family. And they were really excited when Edward decided to go to college somewhere else other than Auburn. And I cannot remember. I want to say it was somewhere in New York. But I know it was somewhere in the Northeast. And so everybody thought, hey, Edward's moving on. I'm sure the Sinclair women breathed a sigh of relief.
Because he had been stalking them for a year.
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Not yet. Sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump ahead.
No, you're fine. But he went up there. Then lo and behold, Dad gets word Edward's left school.
Oh, okay.
So where does Edward come? Of course, he comes back to Auburn.
Okay.
And it's back on the Sinclair women again. And this is when the stalking just really ramps up.
Okay.
And it was said basically that his stalking was just, it was violent. It was harassment in the worst kind. When they went on vacations, he followed them.
Oh, wow.
On vacation. So it took, he was dedicating all of his time to this.
Yeah.
For you to get up and go when they go on vacation, if he dedicated his time to something like he did the stalking of the Sinclairs, he could have really made something of himself.
Yeah, and obviously his parents were like paying his way.
Right. He had the means to really do something with his life. He would break into their home and leave notes. So I'm sure the Sinclair women too at this time feel absolutely violated.
Mm-hmm.
They're terrified. They have no man in their home. And actually the neighbor, Zach Sprayberry,
mm-hmm.
his son, Zach Sprayberry Jr., has later come forward and told the story and these things, but he was 17 at the time.
Okay.
And I believe his dad tried to give Miss Sinclair a gun.
Oh, okay.
And she would not accept the gun. She did not want one in the house.
Yeah, I was like that too when the kids were little.
Which I understand that, but mine is I don't trust myself with a gun.
Yeah.
I'm like gonna kill anybody. But I don't know. That's just, I'm not like anti-gun, but.
We have them now, but when the kids were little, I was scared of them.
Well, and my husband has them, and the boys hunt and all that kind of stuff, but they know safety, mm-hmm. and it's just different. If I was alone now, but again, I'm scared of some knee-jerk reaction. I grab the gun as somebody I know that's kind of, I'm irresponsible. I don't need a gun. Don't give me a gun. But she refused a gun from the neighbor, so they're unarmed.
Yeah.
They're being harassed. Someone's coming in leaving notes. And then I guess that something finally has shifted. I believe either Kathy or Juanita, one of them finally went and got something called a peace warrant.
Okay. Back then, restraining order?
Back then, that was like a restraining order. But it apparently was about worth the paper it was written on.
Yeah.
And that did nothing but just enrage Edward further. And his mother then gets involved.
Okay.
She comes to Auburn to visit Edward.
Mm-hmm.
And while there, Edward, and this just shows his entitlement and brattiness to think that if he just tells his mother
mm-hmm.
to go and beg Juanita to love him and let him come over,
that
will just magically change and everybody will forget that he is effing crazy.
Yeah, and let me get mommy involved. Exactly. Fix my problem.
Which that just makes me sick.
Yeah.
That attitude is so disgusting. So it's showing me that he is not so much a psychopath as he is just an absolute spoiled brat.
Yes.
That if he doesn't get his way, he will get it at any means necessary.
Yeah.
His mother obviously says not only no, but hell no.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not what she said, but that's what I would say.
Yeah, me too.
And like whip my child at that point. And I'm not even a spanker, but my God, like that is just taking it to the edge. And so he gets really mad at his mom. He throws a peanut in her eye.
Oh, my gosh.
And she then gets out of the vehicle and is walking towards her motel room because speculation is they no longer have their Auburn home.
Yeah.
So she's walking back to her motel, and Edward tries to run his mother over with a car.
Oh, my goodness.
Over her not being willing to go beg a 44-year-old woman to love her son and let him come over and visit.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Luckily, she jumps behind a tree.
Edward
stops before hitting the tree, and she tries to get him psychiatric help.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that just absolutely upsets me, even today, is mental health is just not taken seriously.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, and I'm even in the 60s, though, we did have psychiatric hospitals.
We
had Bryce in Tuscaloosa. And yes, they would do electroshock therapy and all kinds of just super experimental, horrible things to people.
Exactly.
But now, because of that, we have absolutely nothing. Everyone falls through the cracks. And obviously, Edward was somebody that fell through the cracks because he didn't fit into a perfect puzzle, insanity, or schizophrenia, whatever. The doctors just said, he's neurotic. He's fine. We can't commit him. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
But mother and father did try to do something. And like we were talking about earlier, a lot of people are like, we can blame the parents for him being so spoiled or entitled. But they did see that something was really wrong, and they did try to do their due diligence.
Yeah, it sounds like they did, for real.
And they can't help that no one would really help them.
Yeah.
And then after this transpired, Edward went on another just bender, I guess, and he went to the Sinclair women's house, broke out all of the windows.
Oh, my God.
He was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, mom was... seems to be more proactive than dad was because dad went and bailed him out of jail.
Okay.
With the caveat of, Edward, I will bail you out of jail if you promise to leave Auburn. If I'm in jail, I'm going to promise anybody anything to get me
out. Yeah.
So, of course, he said, yes, dad, I will. So dad bails him out, and that's, you know, pretty much where the story takes its darkest turn.
Yeah.
It was September 6th, 1967, and Kathy did happen to be home. She was about to go back to school.
Okay.
She was at home. Her sister Faye was also home, and then her mother Juanita, and then her sisters Sarah Elizabeth Sinclair, that they called Libba. She was 18 years old. Then there was Mary Lynn Sinclair, who was 9. And they had a family friend over named Mary Durant that everyone affectionately called Maymay. So and she was 8 years old.
Maymay, so cute. Only 8 years.
And they were just there having a sleepover. And I think every night was a girls' night for them. A house full of girls.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to sleepovers, you don't expect someone to come in and go on a murder spree.
Oh, gosh.
And... that's probably another point of the story that is just so terrifying, because he came in with a gun, a hatchet, and a knife.
Yeah, I think it was a knife. I read kitchen knife or something.
And the one thing about this podcast that I love is that we don't go into detail about the brutality of stuff, just because things are already heavy enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point in revisiting it. But you can imagine what he had in his mind, what he went to do, and what he did do. And all of those girls knew that Edward came in armed, and they had absolutely no way to defend themselves except for to run and hope for the best. Faye actually was hiding under the bed, and she was about the only one that got away completely, not unscathed, because I'm sure that for the rest of her life, she is scarred mentally and emotionally. But Juanita, Faye was hiding under the bed.
Okay.
And Kathy
was hiding too.
Was hiding in the closet.
Yes. Okay. That's what I read. Okay. Sorry.
But Juanita was shot.
Okay.
And then the littles.
They were shot, I think, too.
Yeah.
In their bed.
And there were, well, one was 18 years old, Libba.
Oh, okay.
But then the littlest girls, Mary Lynn, and then Maymay, they were all killed.
Yeah.
They were casualties of Edward's rampage because he didn't get his way, and Juanita and Kathy would not love him.
Yeah.
And all of those girls lost their lives.
Three, right? Yeah. Three girls. Two of the sisters and one of the neighbors.
And Juanita was wounded, but she did recover.
Because she ran to the neighbors to the spray house, didn't she?
And yes, she ran to the neighbor's home. And actually, Kathy, she was hiding too. And then she was in the closet and she jumped out of the window.
Okay.
And she ran to the neighbor who was a doctor. Because there was also a doctor named Dr. Ben Thomas, I believe was his name.
Okay. Yeah.
She ran to the neighbor's house and let him know Edward Sebald is there. He has killed some of my family members, he's got a gun, we need help. And actually, Faye, when she got out from under the bed, she had to walk through basically the carnage and see everything.
And I think I read where he asked Libba, where's your sister? And she wouldn't tell. She said, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh. And of course, that just absolutely rocked Auburn. No one felt safe anymore.
No.
Everyone was talking about it.
And I think he got away, right? For a little while. I mean, but yeah. They knew who it was, at least.
Yeah, he did. He got away. I think he was on the run for almost a year.
Yeah. They said they found him. Mm-hmm. Where they found him in Florida or something?
Yeah. Okay. For almost a year. He really has a lot of dedication. He stalked the girls for almost a year before murdering them. And he took that to the extreme, and then he ran, and he took everything just to the utter extreme. He was caught. He was first given the death penalty.
Okay.
But the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Alabama's death penalty laws. That was the loophole.
Okay.
And they didn't retry his case. The state just gave him 3 life sentences. So he's up for parole, I believe it's every 5 years. That's another reason why I wanted to cover this story, is because his last parole hearing was actually just January the 11th.
Okay.
Which luckily it was denied. Kathy and Faye actually were still there. There was no mention of Juanita.
It said that I did read that Juanita, I don't know if she was there this last one.
But no. She was at the previous one and was 102 years old.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I read that she was 95 at one of them.
Maybe at this one, she... At one of them, but it's almost like Juanita is living and hanging on just to continue sure to come to these parole hearings.
Yes, to make sure he does not get out.
The sad thing is that this family has to relive that night
every five years.
Yes.
That's crazy.
And I'm sure that there is just a plethora of therapy that they go through on a regular basis because of everything that happened. And then you can't just put it behind you. You have to go and relive this every five years.
And I don't know why they have these parole hearings, because I had read somewhere that he wasn't even supposed to get parole. And
so it's all because of the Supreme Court overturning the death penalty.
Okay.
The thing that happened with Charles Manson.
Okay.
Because at one point he did get the death penalty. Then California did away with it.
Okay.
So they didn't want to redo anything. So then Charles Manson's just in there for the rest of his life.
Oh, and also he's not sorry.
No. It said that he expressed very little remorse.
Yeah.
And he admitted he was targeting Kathy Sinclair and her mother Juanita that night in 1967. An actual quote from him when he was in the Staten Correctional Facility, I believe in Elmore County. He said, "I'm guilty of first-degree murder. It's black and white, open and shut. You've got a bad apple here. I'm the bad apple." Pretty much everybody just feels like he's still a danger to society. No matter how much older he gets, it doesn't matter.
70-something now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he just gives no cares. He shows no remorse. So hopefully every 5 years... And I'm sure that is such a waste of resources. It's so ridiculous that they just allow that to continue on.
I know. Why? It's gosh.
And I'm sure they just have to go through the motions. That's just awful. I feel so horrible for those girls.
And of course, I knew about this story because once I moved to Auburn, I found out about it, which, okay. And the reason I knew is because the house went up for sale. And
is it Gardner Drive?
Yeah, I think so. And it was, they had redone it. Of course, it was a beautiful house. Mm-hmm. And I had saw it on the MLS, and I was thinking about sending it to a client, but Emma said, "Mom, that's the murder house." And I was like, "What?" And she was like, "Yeah, you don't know about that?" And she had found out about it in high school. I didn't even know. Mm-hmm. And that's where the murders took place. I mean, it's close to downtown. It's close to
university. I mean, and it's a beautiful street.
It is. But there was, of course, and you had mentioned this earlier, a paranormal aspect to this case that I knew nothing
Another
about.
Another twist that absolutely hasn't been covered, and it has to do with the White House on Gardner, or down the road.
Okay.
I can't remember if it's closer to Sanford, but it was Maymay's house.
Okay.
It's where she lived. And the story goes that Maymay, who was the neighbor that was killed, haunts her house up the street looking for her family.
So sad.
And there's just always reports of different paranormal activity in the home.
Because those homes are older. Obviously, they were built in the 60s. Because, my cousin lives around there, and his house was built in the 60s, too.
Yeah. All those homes were 60s built.
So it's probably new back then when they moved into it.
But it did say that Maymay's family moved very shortly after the murders. I'm sure it was just way too much for them to handle.
So sad.
And they moved away, so Maymay is always looking for her family.
She was only 8 years old. I don't blame her.
Right. I'd be pissed, too. I went to a sleepover. Yeah. I die. My family moves away, And so now, what do?
Yeah, you haunt your house. I don't blame her.
Yeah.
I just never knew that aspect of it, that paranormal, but it makes sense because I do believe in those things.
Oh, yeah.
Leanne's a skeptic, but me, I'm not really. I believe in all
that mean, stuff. I don't want to go in that house, like, in the dark and try it out. Like, I love watching those shows when people do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I am way too scary, and jump scares just get me.
Yeah.
And I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that.
I hopefully maybe she can find some closure, because that is all. Maybe when Edward is no longer getting up for.
If someone knows a medium or something, yeah, they need to like go help her at that house.
I know.
Maybe one of her family members that's still alive can go and poor just kind of tell her what happened.
Yeah. Who lives in that house? I think I know what house they're talking about.
Yeah.
I
don't it's know a white house closer to the corner of the road.
I'd be curious.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to. I'm going to go because it's on my way to and from work. I'm going to go by one day and just look in the windows and see what happened. No. I'm just looking for the ghost that lives in your house. I'm good. I'm not stalking you. I'm good. I'm just looking for the ghost. And then I also have a story dealing with Edward personally from a listener, Amy Camp.
Yes. I love Amy.
She wrote it to me on notes.
That's because we wanted her to record.
This podcast would just be nonstop. but her dad was in prison ministry, and he went and spent a week daytime only at Staten Prison. And is it Staten or is it Staten?
I'm not sure.
it is. We're going to do Staten.
Okay.
And while they were there, they fed the inmates fresh fruit, vegetables, and homemade cookies. Her dad talked with Sebold and said he was a smart, just very well-educated man, had real articulate, very well-spoken. And he found that odd for prison.
Yeah.
Because
he wasn't the normal.
He was not your normal type. Institutionalized yeah. prisoner. And he also told her that one day while they were eating, his salad fell on the ground and Edward picked up all the stuff and ate it anyway. So he just ate his salad off the ground from prison, which I guess if I'm in prison at that point for life and my salad falls on the ground, I might eat it too.
It might have been good. That was like the only salad he was going to get for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Amy's family went on the last day of the week that you can go in and meet all the inmates that participated in the prison ministry, which I find it odd that Edward went and participated in prison ministry, but he's so odd and manipulative that mm-hmm. there's just no telling why he mm-hmm. showed up for prison ministry. But then Amy actually went with her family.
Okay.
Because they just all did that in their little church together. And she met Eddie. And she said that never in a million years would she have pegged him as a murderer because she didn't know who he was at that time. You don't ask one of the prisoners, like, hey, what'd you do to get in here? But later on, someone told her family, like, you realize, like, who y'all have been visiting with? And they said, no. And then they said, that's Edward Sebold. He's the guy that committed a triple homicide in Auburn, Alabama. And they were just all just shook. Because he was just this super smart prison guy that they thought... Prisoner.
Yeah.
They thought he did something to just get in there stupid.
Drugs.
He's definitely not in there for life for triple homicide.
Yeah.
All because these people didn't reciprocate the same feelings that... I don't think he really knew what love was. I think it was just he was never told no.
Yeah, and he wanted what he wanted.
And he didn't know how to accept no.
Yeah. And he's obviously somewhat mentally ill, so.
Yeah.
He's got to be a little bit.
Yeah.
Not enough to be committed at the time.
Yeah. Screw the mental health. We're not going to tackle that. But unfortunately, three people are dead.
Because they didn't believe that he was.
Right. Because he never received any help and was just left to his own devices. And that's what he decided to do that night.
Yeah. 1967, though, they definitely didn't take. You had to really be acting out to be put in a
except hospital. For if you were a woman going through menopause.
Oh, you could easily.
Oh, she's not well.
Yeah.
And they do electroshock on you in a second.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So.
Or postpartum depression or something like
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah. There's postpartum psychosis.
Yes.
That's even different from the depression.
Well, I do think
mental health is a crisis.
So sad.
It's really sad. And our little town will always have that blight on it because of Edward Sebold.
Yep. And thank y'all for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie, for telling a story.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed your storytelling. You did Good. All right. So like, subscribe, like our Facebook, Instagram.
Like, subscribe, share.
And listen.